Hi there, welcome along to another edition of The Sweet Spot. It's the Racing Post's weekly golf show. I'm Bruce Millington, and joining me this week is Joe Champion. Steve Palmer is still trying to get over the gut-wrenching extra time, a penalty shootout defeat by his beloved Weymouth in the FA Cup last week. And I've also given him 10,000 lines he's got to write out. I must never tip Thomas Peters again as long as I live. Joe, how old are you?
31.
31. Did you have, is the concept of lines something you're aware of? Is it more my generation of things? Did your teacher ever make you write something out a million times by way of punishment?
Yeah, I can definitely remember doing that once upon a time.
Okay, I bet they don't have lines now, do they?
No.
Okay, right. Anyway, we have coming up on the show just the one event this week. It's a US Tour event in Bermuda, a sort of intriguing field in that it brings together some of the kind of members of the chorus line of the US and European tours. We'll see what Joe makes of that. I'm also going to spend a bit of time asking Joe how he goes about tackling the task of tipping golf winners, because it is such a unique event. In horse racing, you might get, you know, on a very rare day, you might get 20 plus runners, but most of the time there's not a lot of whittling down to do with golf. There is a lot to do. So we'll get inside Joe's mind as a tipster. First of all, let's have a quick look back on last week, Joe. And I suppose the headline was Hideki Matsuyama in the Zozo Championship. Pretty much pillar to post, wasn't it? And very impressive the way he finished up as well. I mean, was it Saturday or Sunday when he hit that eagle just to kind of put it to bed? It was brilliant, wasn't it?
Sort of somewhere between Saturday and Sunday, that I think.
Yeah, it was actually, yeah.
Matsuyama, I was sort of on the same school of thought of Steve last week that he didn't go into the event playing very well. He said himself that he was playing, felt his game was less than a 1 out of 10 when he arrived in Japan. But now, if you've backed him, that's
I'll
not really
what
you want to
hear. 10. Don't worry about that. He's got a long way to go before he gets.
Yeah, me
to
too.
One
yeah. Obviously the Japanese crowd really lifted him. He's always played well there. I think his last four starts in Japan, he's been in the top 10 each time. I backed him at the Olympics. I thought he'd get the job done there, but he's made up for that now. Really pleased for him, really. I've always liked Matsuyama as a player. It was great to see him win the Masters and great to see him win this week as well. And as you say, he really finished in style.
And the crowds were right up for it, weren't they? It was a real sort of, you know, terrific atmosphere. Everyone loved that. So I think that was great for Japanese golf, great for Matsuyama. Morikawa was kind of on, he got off to a bad start, didn't he? Never quite got it done. And Schauffele, the other market leader, never really showed. I mean, that was about it, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was really it. My best bet was Tommy Fleetwood, who had a good enough week, but didn't quite get it done over the weekend. He was certainly there or thereabouts going into Saturday. The one to take out of it, I think Steve put him up last week, Takumi Kanaya. What a player he could turn out to be. He improved with every round last week to get a share of the places. We will see more of him in the future, no doubt about that.
Okay, and over in the European Tour, it was the Mallorca Golf Championship. On a pretty scruffy-looking course, I've got to say, Joe. I mean, some of the images there, you couldn't tell what was fairway and what was rough, and the greens looked a bit, I don't know, it all looked a bit sort of kind of course I'd play on, really.
Well, it probably is. It's a resort course. We've seen a lot of these on the European Tour recently, and, people just hack around there on their holidays, don't they? We'll get back to the better courses next year when we can. And, so Jeff Winter, a good winner, I think, shot 262s. You know, if you shoot 262s in any tournament, you're going to go close, aren't you? My best part of the weekend was that he almost got locked in his bathroom on Sunday morning, though.
Did he really?
That?
No. Wow.
Yeah, well, he actually did get locked into his bathroom. Him and his wife were in the hotel, and they had to get there. Thank God they've got a six-year-old daughter who was there to rescue them and go get the alert the hotel staff. Otherwise, he might well have missed his tea time on Sunday morning.
That sounds like there's a bit more meat on that bone there, Joe. What were they doing in the bathroom with their daughter outside? That all sounds a bit sinister, doesn't it? Particularly when you're about to go out and try and win a golf tournament. Goodness me.
Well, maybe you needed a bit of a relax beforehand. You don't know. That was all I could glean from the articles about it. So,
I shall delve into
greater detail.
I must admit, I don't know much about Jeff Winter. He's not the ex-Premier League ref, is he? Spells he's got a Y. I look back and he was 80-1. The recent form figures were pretty dismal. I mean, when you look back on a result like that, do you sometimes kick yourself and other times think, well, I was never going to get him if I'd had 30 guesses?
Yeah, I think that's it. You've got to think, Matsuyama, I think, well, he was gettable, wasn't he, even with his recent form? Whereas Jeff Winter, not so much. One thing I would say as far as Jeff Winter's concerned is that He was third at the Lopezan Open in Gran Canaria. So maybe these Spanish islands and these resort courses are a good fit for him. And he's, of course, the third Dane to win on the European Tour this year after both the Højgaard brothers as well. So Dane's going well. I think only English players, South Africans, and Americans have won more titles than the Danes in Europe this year.
Wow, impressive stuff. Anyone else to take out the tournament?
Not particularly any individual player, but I think just look at these Spanish players. They're all playing well whenever they play in Spain. Jorge Campillo, Pepong, he always plays well in Spain. And Garcia Rodriguez, a top 10 for him as well. They're always sort of ones to give an extra glance at when they're playing these kind of tournaments.
Absolutely. And by the way, very sad news from the European Tour at the weekend. Fredrik Andersson Hed, the Swedish golfer who won on the European Tour and was a stalwart of the tour for many years, he lost a bout with cancer, aged just 49 at the weekend. Very, very sad news indeed. Okay, then, Joe, shall we move on to our one and only tournament this week? We're in Bermuda, aren't we? Tell us what the tournament's all about, and then we'll have a little look at the market and then we'll get your tips.
Right, the Butterfield Bermuda Championship at Port Royal Golf Club in Southampton, Bermuda. We've had two previous editions of this tournament, and this course used to host the Grand Slam of Golf, which was a sort of exhibition tournament
It
between
was like
the
a four-man event,
four
wasn't it?
major winners. Yeah, and since then it became a host of the Bermuda Championship in 2019, where Brendan Todd won the first one and Brian Gay won the second one, which probably tells you all you need to know about who's going to go well this week. Short
Does it?
hitters.
What does it tell you? Short hitters, eh?
Short hitters, guys that find fairways. We're talking about two of the shortest hitters on the PGA Tour, and they didn't come into the tournament in particularly good form either. And they still got the job done. Find the fairways and then get your approaches closed, putt well. That's what you really need to do this week. There should be birdies here, but the weather may well determine whether there is or whether there isn't. We're talking about a big coastal course. It's exposed and not a lot of trees to guard most of the course. And there could be a lot of thunderstorms on Thursday. We could have an interrupted tournament and heavy gusts on Sunday afternoon, which could also impact the tournament as well.
Let's have a little look at the market then, shall we? Matt Fitzpatrick looking for that elusive first US Tour win, 14 to 1 fav. Christian Bedeesenhout, 16 to 1. Patrick Reed potentially has a class edge here. He's 22, so is Mito Pereira. And then Seamus Power is 30. Adam Hadwin, 33. Hayden Buckley, oh, I still need to know who he is because he's very prominent on the list. I've literally never heard of him. He's 33. Danny Willett, 40. Russell Knox, 40. Matthias Schwab, 40, and it's 40 by them. So it's not exactly swimming in quality this week. Is this one of those tournaments, Joe, where a Patrick Reed or a Matt Fitzpatrick could just grab it by the scruff of the neck? Or are you going to go a little bit further down the list? How many tips we got?
I've got six tips this week. We should have a look at the field because it's a really sort of strange one. They're actually not able to fill the whole field. It should be 132 runners at this
What?
event. Well, part of that is due to the fact that Bermuda, as a separate territory in its own right, has its own vaccination rules. You have to either have a vaccination or you've been forced to do 14 days of quarantine. So there's a guy on Twitter called Rob Bolton who works for the PGA Tour and catalogues who's in and out of the tournament each week. And yesterday it was just a sea of people coming, being given a place and then immediately withdrawing from the tournament. So we've got 130 runners at the moment. We might not start with 130 because they've ran out of alternates.
Wow, surely if you're a PGA Tour or a European Tour golfer, you're vaccinated, aren't you? I mean, then you have to be with all the travelling, don't you?
Possibly not in America. It's probably not such a big issue, I'd say.
Oh, yeah, fair enough. Yes, very good point. Okay, then, Joe, we've got six tips. I suppose, yeah, as you say, I guess the one thing with all the uncertainty about the field, we're not going to get all of a sudden, a Xander Schauffele parachuting in, are we? So, it's only going to get weaker rather than stronger, if anything, isn't it?
Yeah, certainly. You can't expect. Well, they've literally ran out of players who are entered now, so it's definitely not going to get stronger.
Okay. Right then, six
Yeah.
tips. You're not allowed too many short ones if you have six. You know the rules, Joe.
Quite right. My best bet this week, Seamus Power, the Irishman from Waterford, down by the coast in Southeast Ireland. So he won't have any problems if it gets windy this week. From the Byron Nelson onwards earlier in the season, Seamus Power had six consecutive top 20 finishes or better. in the PGA Tour, four top 10 finishes in that time. And that culminated in a victory at the Barbasol Championship. That's a similar sort of event when it comes to sort of strength of field. And he's played four times since his Barbasol win. On the face of it, his form's dipped slightly. He was 60th at the Wyndham Championship a month after winning the Barbasol. But can you really blame him for that? He's probably spent a couple of weeks off. And then he was 31st among elite company at the Northern Trust at Liberty National, the first of the FedEx Cup playoff events. He missed out on a place in the BMW Championship by two spots, but played well there at Liberty National. He shot under par for every single round. And you think he's probably playing against sort of 45 of the top 50 in the world there and a few other very good players. And then, and so that was the end of his season. And he's returned at the Sanderson Farms Championship. He's missed the cut. Not too worried about that, though, because he was much better last time out at the Shriners Hospitals Open a couple of weeks ago, where he finished 21st and he ranked in the top 10 in strokes gained tee to green. And unlike pretty much all of the other top guys in the market here, he's played this course twice already the last 2 years. Finished 31st and 37th, which is, you know, it's not great, it's not awful. But what we've got to remember with Seamus Power is that he's a much, much better player now. He'll be thriving, he'll be confident. Normally, he's come to this tournament and it's a chance to lock up your PGA Tour status. He doesn't have to worry about that anymore. He's got it all sorted out the next couple of years. And this is a sort of good fit for him as well. He's accurate off the tee. And he was an above average putter on tour last season. I think he's a great bet this week.
Well, you make a very strong case for Seamus Power, around about 30-1, I think, isn't he, Joe?
Yep.
Very good. The main danger, who's that going to be?
So we'll talk about Matt Fitzpatrick in a bit. I've gone for another accurate Englishman. It's Aaron Rye, who's much bigger price than his compatriot. But we know exactly what his game's like. He's an absolute fairway finder. He's a bit of a grinder, is Rye. If it gets tough, it won't bother him at all. But he can make runs of birdies. He's a good putter. He gained his PJ Tour card after he finished runner-up in the Albertson Boise Open, where he got to about 20 under par and then double bogeyed the last to lose it. Disappointing on the face of it, but the fact is, if you finish in the top five in one of those events, you get your PJ Tour card for a year, and that's hugely valuable for a player like Rye, who really has the chance to make a leap up to the next level. And very, very steady operator, and he's got a lot of high class form to his name and good events. He was 19th for the Open this year. He was 26th in the FedEx St. Jude Invitational, and we're talking about events where the top 50 turn up for that. 14th at Wentworth, and probably the strongest event on the European Tour this season. And 25th last time out at Valderrama. He's probably going to have to play a bit better than that, but he didn't quite do it. But he's a steady guy. You know, he's not going to make too many mistakes. And he's perfectly able to operate the wind. His first European Tour win came in the Hong Kong Open by the coast. He's also won the Scottish Open on the kind of faux links at the Racehorse Club. So any win won't bother him. And I think he's a great bet as well.
66-1 for Aaron Rye. Okay, third.
Okay, so I'm going to throw recent form out the window for the next one. Brendan Todd came into this tournament on the back of four missed cuts from his last five appearances. Brian Gay had missed 14 cuts from his last 18 appearances. You don't have to be in great form to rock up and win an event like this. And I think Brian Stewart can make up for missing his last four cuts. On the face of it, he hasn't played that badly. His last five rounds, he scored 68, 70, 70, 68, and 71. He's just been playing in these low-scoring events where a steady plodder like him is not necessarily going to make hay if the putter doesn't fire. He's definitely not as out of form as former cuts in a row suggest, and he's a really accurate operator. He was third in driving accuracy on the PGA Tour last season, fifth so far this season, and he's played well by the coast many times. Twice a runner-up at Mayakoba, where we're going next week. Fifth in the Heritage in 2017. He's had four top 10 finishes at Waialae in Hawaii, where they have the Sony Open. That's just another short, fiddly track like we're going to get this week. Hasn't played great here, but I'm not really quite sure why. Maybe he's just had a couple of bad weeks, and I think he can definitely improve on some moderate course form.
Normally, I suppose if someone won an event after four missed cuts, there'd be a steward's inquiry, but not in this case, hopefully. Right then, three more tips, rattle through them for us.
Okay, so the next one is another Korn Ferry Tour graduate. That's Lee Hodges, who won the Portland Open in 2020 and was fourth in the Korn Ferry Tour Championship before making the full-time jump up to the PGA Tour. He's improving every week. He missed the cut at the Fortinet Championship, and he was 45th at the Sanderson Farms and 27th at the Shriners. He's another accurate guy off the tee. and his previous PGA Tour starts are 13th in the Puerto Rico Open, another coastal track, and 11th in the Barracuda Championship, a similar kind of opposite low-quality event. Straight enough off the tee, and I think he can take another leap forward this week, a course that should suit. Yeah, and the next two are like three-figure prices, and first one's JJ Spawn, who's a guy that's not really been on everyone's radar for the last couple of years, but he showed a lot of promise from 2016 to 2018. He's had a few injuries since, and he's had illnesses as well. They've started to affect his game, but he's back now. He's got his tour card again. He finished second alongside Aaron Rye in the Boise Open to get back on tour. Very tidy off the tee, and a lot of his best efforts have come by the coast. He was runner-up at the RSM Classic in 2017, sixth for the 2017 Heritage at Harbour Town, and third at Mayakoba in 2018. As I said, he's got his card back. He opened up with two rounds of 69 at the Sanderson Farms Championship, and then scuppered by a third round 78, but better at the Shriners last time out, where he finished 35th, and he's certainly not out of place in this field. And I've got one more, a similar price, who's been well backed already. He's been put up in a couple of other areas, and that's John Pack, who's a real potential star of the future, John Pack. He swept the college golf awards. He was the winner of the Haskins Award, the Ben Hogan Award, and the Jack Nicklaus Award. If you get all three, chances are you'll go on to have a pretty good career, I think. Say Fagalo is making a few waves and is playing this tournament. He won it last year. John Pack has had a slow start to his professional career, but after missing his first five cuts, he finished 39th for the Barracuda Championship, where he actually played quite well for the first two rounds and tailed off a bit after that. But he's had a break. He's had a few weeks off. And that's what I like. I think he's probably had a bit of time to take stock, probably work out kind of where he's gone wrong in his first few forays into the professional game. And hopefully he could be much more competitive here.
Okay, Joe, well done. We'll go through those six with their best prices in a minute. First of all, we'll have a little look at the market leaders. Who is Hayden Buckley? Why is he always so short?
He's another Korn Ferry Tour graduate. He's played really well the last sort of three out of four starts. He's had top 10 finishes, top 10 at the Shriners last time, I think. Not sure I could back him in at this price, even in this field day.
Okay, so Fitzpatrick, how closely did you come to backing to tipping him?
Not at the original 11-1. He's drifted to 14-1. I can imagine the bookies obviously haven't seen a lot of money for Matt Fitzpatrick. He's probably not going to get a better chance to win a PGA Tour event. Let's be honest here. This field is not strong, and he comes here after winning at Valderrama, but now he still hasn't got over the line on the PGA Tour, and this is a course he hasn't played before. I wasn't tempted 11-1. If he continues to drift, then I wouldn't put off people backing him at sort of 16s or something. But yeah, not for me at the prices he was yesterday when I was finalising my tips.
Okay, I can't. I must admit, I like Badiz and Hoot, but I couldn't have him at 16s. Could you?
No, not. You know, he hasn't played since Wentworth as well. That was sort of 6 weeks ago. There's no guarantees that he's going to be, firing on all cylinders. And certainly, if he is rusty and there's wind and rain on Thursday, then he could be found out early on. Perhaps he makes a slow start and never recovers.
All right, what about this? Let me put this one to you. Big Pat Reed, he comes swaggering into Bermuda. He says, right, look at all this lot in the locker room. They're not fit to lace my boots. I'm going to go out there and absolutely blow them away. Is that a possibility?
It certainly is. I was probably thinking Patrick Reed was of the top three, the one I'd most like to be on, because he is the best player of that top three and has achieved more than anyone else in this field. We're talking about a Masters champion here. But his form has been pretty bad recently. We know he obviously had problems with illness about a month or so ago and hasn't been great since. And the problem with Patrick Reed is when his game's not on, he can spray it around to all parts, and he's got that sparkling short game, but if that doesn't get him out of trouble, then he's not going to win this week.
I'm going to make sure that even if he wins, I don't lose. That's going to be my strategy.
That's a solid strategy, I say.
I think that's the way forward. Okay, Joe, excellent. Let's reiterate the tips, and if you can just give us a price guide for all of them as well, that'd be brilliant. So it is the Butterfield Bermuda Championship. Joe has six selections as follows.
So I've got Seamus Power at 30-1, Aaron Wright 66, Brian Stewart at 80, Lee Hodges at 80, JJ Spawn at 150-1, and John Pack at 150-1 as well.
Nice stuff. Excellent. Well, good luck with those, Joe. And will you be on Racing and Football Outlook duty as per normal this week?
I will be, and it'll be Ian Wilkerson previewing in the Racing Post.
Okay, and Ian's been a bit of a super sub as well, hasn't he, when he stepped in for Steve? He's had some good wins this year. So check out the RFO, super little paper there, out every Tuesday. All your weekend football, loads and loads of great racing, and, of course, the Champs Golf Tips, and then Racing Post on Wednesday. Ian Wilkerson with all the stats, all the form guide, and his verdict on this competition. Right then, as we said at the start, Joe, I just want to delve into your mind a little bit and just see what happened. Talk us through the process of how you go about finalising your selections. When does it start? Is it Monday morning or Sunday night?
Yeah, very much Monday morning for me. Depends on which tournament. You have to play it week by week. You know, if we've got certain tournaments where you might need to do a bit of early research, then you can certainly have a look at Sunday. Like certain weeks, we've got courses that we know that we go back to every year. You know what it's going to take to go well at the Masters, for example, Augusta National. But other courses you might not have even heard of before, and particularly on the European Tour in recent times, you have to have a quick delve into actually what they're going to be like, what it's going to take to go well there. And that's usually the starting point for me, is that think about what the course is going to be like and who does the course fit, and work on that basis. That's sort of which players fit into that bracket. And then I kind of will have a sort of wait around, try and look at who's in the field, and then wait for the prices to come out. Always think, you know, you can have an idea of who's going to win, but it doesn't matter if they're, you know, if they're suddenly, you know, I thought Hayden Buckley was going to be a decent bet this week, but as I said, he looks too short. Sort of, you've got to wait for the prices, and then you can make your judgment, really. You can't say so-and-so is going to win that tournament and then back them at 5-1 or something.
And Joe, what's more important to you, current form or course form?
I think it's very important not to get sort of stuck in on one or the other. Current form is always useful, but I'm quite happy to, you know, delve into course form, and everything is price dependent. You know, you can play a player at prices in certain tournaments. If they're out of form, you may be getting a great price about them because there might be a reason why they haven't played well. I mentioned Brian Stewart earlier. He's played four courses where I wasn't necessarily expecting him to play well, and then this is a good fit for him. It's all about knowing what player should go well in certain places rather than just who's playing well at the moment, because chances are that they might not be playing well again if they play on a course that's completely unsuitable for them.
And do you end up with a kind of shortlist of about 10 or 12 from which you do your final selections?
Yeah, I do kind of have a try and narrow it down. It's difficult, really. You've got to kind of look at every single player in their own right, and can be very time consuming at times, but it's the best way to make sure you don't miss out on anyone. Yeah, I can't say I've had a massive deep dive into some of the guys that are going to go off 1,000-1 this week, but yeah, you kind of certainly the top half of the market at least, and then maybe anyone that maybe catches your eye further down at bigger prices.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, Joe, thank you very much indeed for that. Thanks for your contribution today and good luck with your tips. What have we got next week? It's Portugal, isn't it?
Portugal and the Mayakoba Classic. So expect anyone that goes well this week could have a good chance next week as well.
Brilliant stuff. Okay, Steve's back next week. I'm back next week. Joe will be back on Racing and Football Outlook duty next week. Good luck with your bets this week. Bet safely and responsibly, and we'll see you next week.